Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us today, and I appreciate you telling friends about the show and having them tune in as well. We're going to have two very interesting guests today. We'll talk about some wide-ranging subjects. The first is grade creep in the federal government, and that is not a disease or an itch. Grade creep is the fact that in the federal government over the years, the average grade level, the pay level of people has been increasing. And some people think it's a reflection of the professionalism of the federal government. Others think that there are hidden pay raises, and this is a way to for empire building in the government. And then we're going to switch gears and talk about Medicare Part B. This is something, if you're about to retire or retired, is critically important if you're a federal worker. It is a costly form of insurance, but it's the kind of thing that some people should have, and we'll give you the pros and cons of that. But first, back to the world of grade creep, and we're talking with Steve Watkins. He's editor of the Federal Times. Steve, you with us?
Sure am. Good to be with you,
Mike. Hey, thank you for joining us. One of your writers, Steve Losey, did looks like an awful lot of work for combing through statistics and came up with some interesting numbers. Tell us what that was.
Sure. Yeah, Steve, as you said, he combed through the Office of Personnel Management's database, which a lot of is online through their FedScope, but basically put a lot of numbers together, finding that the percentage of federal employees in the workforce who are at the grades 12 through 15, and those, of course, are the senior level GS grades, just before career civil service employees go to the senior executive service. But that percentage has been steadily on the rise, and new hires also in those categories, grades 12 through 15, also have been on the rise. But interestingly, in the last year, from 2009 to 2010, there was a very noticeable spike as well. So that's interesting, and I think that gets to your point that you raised, and that is the suspicion. Well, you know, maybe this is one way that feds are getting around the pay freeze, is possibly by getting promoted into higher grades. But a lot of it is also driven, as I say, by new hires. There's an awful lot of new hires that are being done at those grades 12 through 15, which is a fairly recent phenomenon to see it those numbers as high as they are.
My mother came to Washington during the war to be, and she was a GS-2, and that was not unusual. They hired a lot of people, particularly young women, right out of high school, for clerical jobs, and the government was full of them. And so, obviously, there probably aren't 500 GS-2s left in the government today.
I'd like to meet one of them anyway.
I knew a GS-1 years ago. I didn't know a GS-1, and he was a messenger elevator operator, so that dates me. But in your article, in the Federal Times article, you quoted John Palguda and some other people who were veterans of the civil service, and they said they were very suspicious of this grade creep, didn't they?
Yeah, and Henry Romero was another prominent expert that Steve talked to, who is a former kind of head of pay policy at OPM. Now he's a consultant, but both of them, are widely acknowledged experts in the field. But both said that grade creep is not a new phenomenon. Feds are familiar with the concept anyway, and probably have benefited from it. But basically, their point is that when you have trends like this, it does essentially eat away at the integrity of the civil service system, the general schedule, and it does so on a number of levels. For one thing, it hurts performance because generally what happens is employees start building an expectation that they're going to be promoted no matter what, so long as they put in the amount of time that all their colleagues have been putting in, and so you have people rising through the ranks without necessarily having solid links to employee performance or to defined expansions in their job duties. And so, you know, the headline of the article basically kind of sums it up, which is that job duties are increasingly not linked to grade and pay. And so that's what you have. You know, there's other implications of this also. One is on payroll budgets. It's agencies are paying more for the same talent, the same job duties, basically. And obviously that cuts into agency budgets at a time when they can ill afford that. And hiring as well, because now agencies, in order to attract good talent, people with the skills they need, generally have to kind of game the system, and doesn't mean managers are being nefarious. They're just doing the best they can to recruit the talent that they need, and that's how they do it, is by bringing people in at higher and higher levels.
Well, and I think of the obvious too. It's a way to do an end run around a pay freeze. Nobody can get a pay raise, but you can promote them, and that is an automatic increase.
Yeah, and I think that's quite a plausible factor here, that and especially because of the jump that we saw just in the last year. You know, the chart that one of the charts that we had quite a few, but one shows that the total percentage of employees in those grades 12 through 15 in 1998 it was 48%, so less than half. This past year, 2010, that number is at 64%. So that's a huge increase, from about a half to almost two-thirds of the workforce are in those grades.
I got an email this morning from a guy in Washington, and he'd seen the column that, you know, was plugging this show and using your statistics. And he said that's all well and good, but he said one thing that you need to point out is that many of the lower-level jobs, lower-graded types of jobs that the government used to have been farmed out to the private sector. And he pointed to the Clinton years when a number of what they called overhead jobs were eliminated. Those were the source of all the buyouts, and they sent these people to the private sector. And he said that probably is a contributing factor.
I would agree with that. I think that is part of it, and I think it goes to your earlier point about, you know, how it wasn't too many decades ago that there were a lot more GS-2s and 4s and 5s and 6s in government. I think that's one phenomenon. I think another is that a lot of those jobs just disappeared altogether from technology. You know, a lot of it was automated. You know, you don't need the clerks and so forth that government used to have to collate information and so forth. That's all done through computers now.
Yeah, I know very well. In fact, I don't think I know anybody that has a secretary now. And,
yeah,
you know, 10, 15 years ago, everybody worth his or her salt had a secretary.
Yeah, yeah. And I think all that adds, you know, contributes to this phenomenon. But it is pretty interesting, you know, but the last year we've had this spike. I don't know what, actually, I don't have the number here for 2009, but it clearly went up from something in the mid 50% of employees at those grades 12 through 15 up to 64%, according to this OPM data. So that's a pretty significant jump. And again, a lot of that is because they did hire a lot of new people at those grades. And I think, you know, and that's, I think another big factor is that we've got, you know, more feds retiring. I think the wave is finally starting to hit. And as a result, agencies need to replace a lot of those folks who have been in those higher grades. And some of it is, of course, is going to come through internal promotions, but a lot of it is going to have to, you know, be sourced from new hires from outside the government.
Now, that would be during the Obama administration, correct?
Yes, correct.
I was thinking that possibly some of it, and, you know, we've had a sea change here. Maybe we can talk about that. But 2009 was arguably one of the best years federal workers ever had in Congress and elsewhere, and followed by 2010 and 2011, a couple of the worst. But let me just take a short break here, and I'll come right back with Steve Watkins here on WFED.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
On the move but need your CAPS info? CAPS Mobile lets you use your mobile phone to stay connected to the CAPS. Receive breaking news and special offers by text message. Check live scores and stats with a CAPS Mobile app. Enter Text to Win contest for great CAPS prices and much more. To join the CAPS Mobile Club, text CAPS to 43803 now. For more info on all CAPS Mobile offerings, visit the Fan Zone section of WashingtonCAPS.com. Stay CAPS connected with CAPS Mobile.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. Can I help you?
Yeah, my brother got an Insignia HD Radio Portable last month, and he really enjoys his workouts now.
Yep, HD Radio broadcasts are great. All kinds of new stuff on the HD2, HD3 channels.
And the Insignia HD Radio Portable is $49.99?
Yes, it's a great value.
Whoa, lead the way.
And did you know Insignia also offers an HD Radio Boombox for just $99?
Insignia HD Radio Receivers. Get them now at Best Buy. HD Radio. More radio, more value.
More than 45,000 men and women of the U.S. Armed Forces have been wounded in action overseas. They need our help as they return to the homes they so bravely protected. Please join the GTSI Charity 5K Run Walk in Herndon, Virginia on October 15th, benefiting the Wounded Warrior Project, providing much-needed direct programs for injured and returning veterans. For race information or to register online, visit GTSICharity5K.com or visit them on Facebook at GTSI Charity 5K.
Three things to know about the proposed merger of AT&T and T-Mobile. With the planned merger, AT&T will invest $8 billion more and deploy the next generation of wireless internet to nearly everyone in America. This investment will create as many as 96,000 American jobs. We're not investing to create jobs, but jobs will be created because we're investing. AT&T.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
My wife's monthly trip to the beauty salon was really adding up. I mean, between dyeing her roots and trimming the dead ends, we were going dead broke. So to save some money, I'm cutting it for her while she sleeps. Shh. No, don't wake up yet. Go to sleep, go to sleep. You're almost gorgeous. Oh, she is going to love this.
There's an easier way to save. Get online. Go to geico.com. Get a quote. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Join senior government leaders from CMS, NIH, HHS, VA, and MHS at AFSEA Bethesda's 4th Health IT Day, November 2nd at the Mayflower Renaissance Hotel in D.C. Discussions will include managing security for a mobile point of care, joint electronic health records, federal health regulations and procurements, and big data management. AFSEA Bethesda thanks premier sponsors Accenture, Booz Allen Hamilton, Intel, Lockheed Martin, Microsoft, Northrop Grumman, SAS, and Vangent. Register at AFSEABethesda.org/HealthITday.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Steve Watkins. He's editor of the Federal Times. And Steve, we were interrupted rudely there by a commercial, but we were talking about this grade creep article that your colleague did in the Federal Times this week. And you mentioned that the number of white collar workers in the GS 12 through 15 ranks, and that salary is $75,000 and change to $155,000, to put it in perspective. But that percentage had grown from 48% in 1998 to 64% in 2010. And you said that there seemed to be a spike last year in hiring people at higher grades. And I wondered if part of that might not be the administration's efforts. You know, for a while there, they thought the government was going to expand. They were talking about hiring 150,000 people. They brought a number of people in for this troubled asset relief program and some other things. Do you think that could be a contributing factor?
Certainly, it could be a contributing factor. I think the figure of the jump, the increase for that year is so sizable. I think it has to be more than that. There has to be some sort of larger trend here, and I can only imagine that it does have to do with the government kind of as a whole reaching out more outside the federal sector to bring in folks to replace retiring feds at those higher ranks.
Is there any hint that these people are political?
They are not. I don't believe anyone at. I don't know. I have to say I don't believe they are. They're GS 12 to 15, which you know makes them civil service non-political.
Okay.
But I think you know one thing that that also could contribute here, and Steve and I talked about this. Was that the Defense Department has been converting a lot of its NSPS, the National Security Personnel System folks, back into the GS system. So obviously that wouldn't be reflected in the new hire numbers, but it could be reflected in the percentage of overall employees who are in those grades.
You know, that could very well be because when the conversion started, I got a lot of complaints from people about it, and they really tailed off, and it's as if people found out that when they were converted back, they were doing better than they were under NSP.
Well, I got an awful lot of emails from people who think they're doing worse,
too,
and we're put into GS levels that they felt were below where they were before. But I think, you know, all this is interesting, and it just kind of fuels the debate that's ongoing now about is the general schedule system, is it time for big reform? Is it time to modernize the civil service with a new personnel system that one is more modern, that makes more distinctions between different grades, that perhaps is made up of pay bands that are not so inflexible, and that recognize that different occupations need to be compensated differently. And what you have with the GS system, of course, is that, you know, a GS 10 lawyer is going to get the same rate of pay, basically, as a GS 10, you name it, admin or accountant, what have you. And, you know, the pay scales in those occupations fluctuate all the time, and so there's a compelling argument in my mind that there needs to be more market sensitivity to the pay that federal employees get.
Well, last week we had the president of the American Foreign Service Association on, and she was explaining that at least the Foreign Service part of the State Department has a rank-in-person system, which they modeled after the U.S. Navy. So you are an FSO 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, however the numbering goes, and your salary is commensurate with your grade, and it doesn't necessarily depend on how many people you supervise or even the program you're working on. It is a rank-in-person system. And I know about a year and a half ago at a conference that I attended, John Berry, the director of the Office of Personnel Management, gave out sort of a laundry list of some of the things they were going to be looking at when they tackled civil service reform. And one of them, as I recall, was, as you were speaking of a banding system, they were talking about or looking at the idea of setting up a system where you really had three levels in government. And I believe it was apprentice, journeyman, and expert. I think those were the terms they used. And those people in the apprentice, in the journeyman, and in the expert range would have their own pay band, and it would kind of be a rank-in-person system.
Yeah. Well, I remember when John Berry talked about that, and to be honest, I haven't heard anything since then.
Right.
So it's hard to say if that's still kind of the thinking, but we will see, you know, as part of President Obama's deficit reduction plan, he does call for a new commission that basically would he calls it the Commission on Federal Public Service Reform, that basically would come together. These are made up of luminaries and lawmakers and so forth to essentially rethink the civil service and how they should be paid and promoted and evaluated for performance and so forth. And in outlining that, he clearly, President Obama, that is, in his proposal, clearly outlines his preference that, you know, whatever the new system is they come up with, it needs to be sensitive to labor markets. It needs to promote performance and so forth. So I think we will changes are ahead no matter what. We've had Democrat and Republican administrations in place both saying that civil service needs to be overhauled. So the unions are for the most part the only ones that I've seen who are adamant about sticking with the general schedule system, but it seems that the political community seems ready to move along, and so I'm sure we're going to see some changes. The question is going to be how soon will we see those, and how severe will they be?
Well, you're right about the fact that this was announced and sort of floated, and then it disappeared. And I think the unions were horrified by a number of the proposals, and there was another one too that would make it much easier to fire people, and it would be peer groups would take a look at a recommendation of a supervisor, or employees could look at supervisors and make a decision within a matter of 30 days or something to hire and fire. It was revolutionary. It was good for us, good reading, but I'm not sure that people involved in government digested it very well. Steve, if you look at the government, If you came in and somebody assigned you to cover the civil service, our beat, the people side of government, if they told you to come in 2009, you'd say, and you looked at the situation, you'd say, these people have it made. Congress has approved a number of benefit changes. Some of them have been in the works for years. You know, happy days, we're here again. It was looking great. And then the very next year, you had the impact of the recession. You had the start of the pay freeze and whatnot. I mean, the government did a psychological sea change in that one year, didn't it?
It did, and I think that was driven largely by I have to say the Tea Party had a huge effect on it. And kind of indirectly, I guess, you could say that really the driving force here is the federal deficit, that the national mood really changed quite dramatically. And I think when the debt ceiling debate came, and well before that even, the national sense really got pretty strong as it relates to the deficit. I think most Americans really started viewing it as a big problem. Even the Defense Department was saying that it's a national security threat, and so, you know, everyone was you know, coming to a realization around the same time that federal spending had to be cut pretty dramatically. And I think we're kind of in somewhat of an analogous period as during the, you know, the time when Congress basically overhauled the CSRS. You know, there was a feeling back then that feds were getting overly generous benefits, and so they pared them back by basically designing the FERS system.
Yeah, well, USA Today has been on a sort of a campaign for a little over a year now about overpaid feds, the benefits levels, and all of that, and that's had a major political impact.
Well, I've certainly been aware of those stories, and we've carried some of them on our website. And of course, you know, Federal Times is a Gannett paper, as mm-hmm. is USA Today. We've carried them one because I think, as you say, they do influence the political debate, and I think it's important for our readers to be aware of them. One of the more recent ones that USA Today ran had to do with the unfunded liability of federal pensions. We're actually going to be taking a crack at that story in the coming issue on Monday. Steve Losey looked at the figures, and we basically came up with a different kind of result, and we'll get more into that in our story, but basically that the unfunded nature of federal pensions is not nearly as large as what we had seen reported in USA Today.
Right. I think they were using military figures as well.
Well, they were. I think they were looking at pretty much the entire amount of liability in the pension system. You're right, they were looking also at military, but they did break it out, civilian and military. But not all of that liability is unfunded. Federal agencies are required by law and by rules to contribute certain portions to the pension funds. And they do that, and they have to. So there's no getting around it. But there, with CSRS, there certainly are large unfunded amounts in the hundreds of billions, but it doesn't amount to over $1 trillion.
Well, great. We'll look forward to that next week, Steve. Yeah. Thank you, Steve Watkins, for being with us here on your turn. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking with David Snell about. sorry.
Remember when you tried doing something for the first time? You probably weren't very good at it. On a scale of stinko to virtuoso, chances are you were right down there. But you kept at it, and soon you went from not so hot to halfway decent. Kaiser Permanente reminds you we all start out as beginners, stumbling over our feet, going right instead of left, swinging and missing. So whatever you're curious about, tennis or horseback riding, playing guitar or pole dancing, softball or soccer, forget about being perfect and focus on the fun. The rest will fall into place. So come on, stumblers, bumblers, listen up. It's okay to stink. Just start. Kaiser Permanente. We want you and your interests to thrive. Visit kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Here's Henry Sinkowitz, the CIO of DISA, on the Storage Efficiency Panel, sponsored by NetApp.
For us, it's the question of how do we take all of this analytics and make it manageable and digestible and then secure enough to be put out to the troop units in a timely fashion. So, I mean, when we look at the problem sets, I think that's some of it. And then, I mean, obviously, the medical system is a completely associative but slightly separate problem set.
To hear more, visit federalnewsradio.com, keyword storage.
If you're in federal IT, you want to hear more about storage efficiency, especially when storage is eating up your IT budget. But what is storage efficiency? NetApp makes it simple. It's storage that's flexible, that's easier to manage, that requires far less hardware, often only half as much. And half as much means half the cost. IT efficiency starts with storage efficiency built on NetApp and delivered by NetApp partners like Swish Data Corporation. To get efficient now, visit netapp.com/federal.
For more than 30 years, FLIR Systems has provided customers with trusted support needed in critical missions. With a full spectrum of products designed to enhance perception and awareness, FLIR's threat detection systems are used by civilian and government agencies around the world. FLIR now provides comprehensive radiation detection and identification for threat detection, disaster preparedness, and emergency management, such as the ongoing crisis in Japan. For more information, visit FLIR.com/detection.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. Can I help you?
Yeah, my brother got an Insignia HD Radio Portable last month, and he really enjoys his workouts now.
Yep, HD Radio broadcasts are great. All kinds of new stuff on the HD2, HD3 channels.
And the Insignia HD Radio Portable is $49.99?
Yes, it's a great value.
Whoa, lead the way.
And did you know Insignia also offers an HD Radio Boombox for just $99?
Insignia HD Radio Receivers. Get them now at Best Buy. HD Radio. More radio, more value.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on WFED at 10 a.m. Join me this week for my special guest, Ruth Ann Clark, Senior Market Director with Wells Fargo Bank Commercial Banking Sector. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the D.C. metro area. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
It's not always easy to know when a person is agitated or excited. Sometimes you may not even know when you are. So a new wearable device has been engineered to detect stress, bad or good. The sensor looks like a wristwatch but records movement, temperature, and small changes in electric currents on your skin triggered by emotion. Rosalind Picard of MIT's Media Lab is the lead inventor.
It changes with things that are changing in your brain, and you wouldn't think that information would show up on your wrist, but some of it does.
The device can help you and others understand what stresses and relaxes you. For example, people may have doubts when you say walking back and forth helps calm you down.
But when they see the signal plummet when you pace, they say, wow, that pacing looks like it's helping you. I'm not going to tell you to stop pacing anymore.
Currently, the sensor is mainly used for various research projects, but it could be available to the general public in a year. To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and we're going to be talking with David Snell. He's Director of Retirement Services for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, and David is a former official of the Office of Personnel Management, and he knows his business. David, are you with us?
Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for being with us today.
Is this Mike or is this Ken the copy boy?
This is Mike, not Ken the copy boy.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I did a blog today for WTOP about my experiences at the Washington Post, but that's for another time, another place. I hope Ken either has a sense of humor or he's dead. And I've been getting a lot of emails from federal retirees and people who are nearing retirement, and they always tense up this time of year because this is when you have to the open season, as you well know, for the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program. The health insurance open season begins in next month, and it runs through December, and people are going to have to pick their health plan. Most people don't do anything. I think only about 6% of people switch plans. Walton Francis, the world's leading authority on it for Washington Consumer Checkbook, says that 40 to 50% probably should be changing plans, but very few do. But the retirees and near retirees look at this carefully because of the Medicare situation. And in particular, and you and Will Shakespeare coined the phrase to be or not to be. And in this case, it's a Medicare Part B. Would you explain, if we, without getting too deeply in the weeds, what Medicare, what Part B is, and then we can talk about whether federal retirees should buy it or not?
Sure. Simply put, Part B is part of the original Medicare, which was Part A, hospital, and Part B is the medical portion of it. That's the portion that will cover your doctor bills, tests, anything having to do with medical services. So Part B will cover up to its approved amount those costs to you for those services.
Now, you have to buy Part B, is that right?
That's right. Part A is automatic, and most people have been paying for it through their payroll deductions as employees. Part B is comes with a monthly premium, but it's also voluntary. You don't have to take Part B. A lot of folks we get calls from ask, am I required to enroll in Medicare Part B? And the answer is, unless you're under TRICARE and want to go to TRICARE for life, or you want to go into Medicare Part C, which is a different program, no, you don't have to enroll in Medicare Part B when you become age 65.
Now, if I'm a federal retiree or about to retire, 65, eligible for Medicare, it will cover some of these expenses that are now covered by the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program plan. But what are the pros and cons of getting Part B? The con, I guess, obviously, is the cost of it. It's it'd be a couple thousand dollars a year for a couple. So if money is an issue for you, this is something you really need to look at. Why should somebody buy it or not buy it?
Well, it depends on their medical needs and their financial needs, as you just pointed out, Mike. If they're using their current plan under the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, they're using that a lot. If they're spending a lot of out-of-pocket money on that, then I think they should seriously consider enrolling in the Medicare Part B and paying that extra $115.40, I think, is the base premium, this, and that's per month. I think they ought to seriously think about looking at it. There's some other areas that they might consider enrolling in Medicare Part B. If they're in an HMO plan, HMO plans under the federal program are the most likely to drop out of the federal program, and they can do that at almost any time of the year, which leaves the enrollees in that HMO scrambling around for coverage. The rules allow them within a certain amount of time to elect another coverage, and in some cases, the Office of Personnel Management will deem them into a comparable option of Blue Cross and Blue Shield. But because of that, if you have Medicare, that kind of serves as a backup in case a situation like that happens.
Yeah, I remember when some plans did go out of business, and OPM automatically put the people into a Blue Cross option unless they chose something else. So they never really were without coverage.
Right.
They may have been without a plan, but they weren't without coverage. Now, if money is no object, then I guess everybody would take Medicare Part B and just, you know, the belt and suspenders theory, you know, to be totally covered. But when they tell people to look at your medical situation and whatnot, the thing that would worry me about that is you can't anticipate really anything, a stroke, a heart attack, cancer, or being hit by a bus.
That's absolutely true. I mean, that's the whole idea of insurance. It's to protect your yourself from having to pay catastrophic amounts in the event that something happens. It's all about risk.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I mean, and if people are really worried about that, then by all means, enroll in Medicare Part B. Hopefully, they've not waived their Part A. But and together, along with the federal program, you'll have about 100% coverage. And you know, if that helps you sleep at night, hey, that's worth the money.
Yeah, my mother was healthy all of her life. It was a walker. I don't think she got a car until she was about 35, but she was very healthy. But she suffered from dementia in the last few years. And because she had long-term care insurance, she was a retired federal worker, too. But she had long-term care insurance. She had one of the good federal health plans. And she had had Medicare, and our out-of-pockets were expenses were minimal in the family, as opposed to what they would have been had she only had like the insurance itself, and certainly not long-term care insurance.
Right. Well, that's a great example, you know, as to why people will want to enroll in Medicare Part B, and as you point out, the long-term care insurance is also. Part of your financial planning, it should be, in the event that something happens, so that your bank account or the family member's bank accounts aren't wiped out, trying to keep you comfortable and with medical care.
Well, I know a couple that got long-term care insurance a couple of years ago, and partly as a joke, but it was also partly to remind their kids that they had it. They sent them a copy of the policy, sent their children a copy of their long-term care insurance policy, and they said, this is our Christmas gift to you this year. You know, in other words, you won't have to be taking care of us. And I thought that was well done.
Oh, that was a great idea.
Absolutely. Yeah, because you really are buying insurance that your family won't be wiped out taking care of you.
Right.
Well, it would seem to me, and again, I'm not an expert in this, but that unless somebody is really struggling financially, that I would recommend that people always get Medicare Part B.
Well, I don't automatically recommend that,
mm-hmm.
and that's because personally I don't because Medicare duplicates what you're already getting covered under by the. Your federal plan, and most federal plans are good plans. They cover an awful lot of things, plus they give you coverage for prescription drug benefits, which Medicare Part B does not. But I just don't believe in paying for duplicate coverage if you don't need to.
Right. Well, you know, people can go to the NARFE website, www.narfe.org, and click on, and you have some information for non-members, much more if people are members and can click on this kind of things. David, I want to talk about the subject du jour, the thing of the hour. This time next week, federal workers may be dancing in the streets, and I'm going to ask you why when we come back here from a short break here on Federal News Radio.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
The environmental problems we're facing today are more complex than those of 40 years ago. What is EPA doing to better incorporate sustainability into its decision-making? Why is EPA involved in green chemistry research? Join host Michael Keegan on the next The Business of Government Hour as he explores those questions and so much more with Dr. Paul Anastas, Assistant Administrator, Office of Research and Development within the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
Caps fans, hockey season is in full swing.
Doesn't get better than that.
The Caps are hard at work. Can you feel the excitement building? You've been doing your part in building America's hockey capital by extending our consecutive game sellout streak at Verizon Center. Tickets are still available for remaining games, but are extremely limited. So call 202-397-C or log on to WashingtonCaps.com/singleticks and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Welcome to Beltway Q&A, provided by EMC. Our guest is Dan Doherty, Vice President, EMC Federal. Dan, how important is the storage and backup infrastructure to IT transformation projects like virtualization and cloud?
Storage and backup decisions are critical. Virtualization projects demand infrastructure that integrates with VMware, scales, performs, and are simple and affordable.
So EMC is number one in virtualized environments?
That's right. Twice as many customers are choosing EMC infrastructure for virtualized environments.
Available on GSA schedule through government acquisitions.
Government technology professionals should prepare to attend GovCom 2011, the new trade show featuring government audiovisual communication solutions at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, November 1st and 2nd, featuring nearly 100 leading manufacturers and solutions providers showcasing the latest in audio, video, conferencing, collaboration, control systems, digital signage, and visual display technologies. GovCom will help government agencies and the military boost collaboration, enhance security, improve reliability, and cut costs. GovCom is your opportunity to see cutting-edge communications products, network with fellow technology professionals, and get valuable training from leading experts in government and industry. For more information and your free exhibits pass, visit GovCom2mshow.org and use the code FED. That's govcomshow.org. GovCom is brought to you by Infocom International, the association representing the audiovisual industry. Government IT executives, step into the past to start shaping the future at this year's Executive Leadership Conference in Colonial Williamsburg. The American Council for Technology and the Industry Advisory Council's ELC Conference, October 23rd through the 25th, brings together government and industry leaders to address the acquisition, security, and human capital challenges you face in your increasingly mobile world. Register today at actgov.org. That's www.actgov.org.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with David Snell. He is Director of Retirement Services at the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. In the first half of the show, we were talking about the pros and cons of Medicare Part B. And now I wanted to move to a less complicated, a happier subject. David, it's been 2 years since federal retirees, military retirees, and people who get Social Security have had a cost of living adjustment. But it looks like the end is near, correct?
Absolutely. If you remember, back in 2008, the last time there was a cost of living adjustment, it was a big one. It was 5.8%. Since then, the rate of inflation has been such, it has not triggered cost of living adjustment for seniors, people that are retired, and until this year. And it looks to us like about a 3.6% cost of living adjustment will be triggered, and that announcement, I think, is Monday, the 19th.
Yeah, that will be a red letter day for a lot of people because the fact that we've had very low inflation and many months even of deflation, very rare occurrence in this country, over the past 2 years, some people appreciate that, and they know that inflation is one of the worst things that can happen. But also with health premiums going up and everything else seeming to go up, the retirees are ready for a raise. Now, this increase, and I think it will be announced Monday, I think you're right, you're looking at it to be about 3.6%. What about these people, and this happens every time there is a COLA triggered. I get emails from people, and they say, well, you know what I'm going to do, especially since there's not going to be a pay raise, I'm going to retire December 31st, and I'll get that 3.6% COLA. A great plan, but there's one flaw, right?
Absolutely. You won't get that 3.6% COLA if you retire in December. The COLAs are made effective on December 1st and usually show up in the January 1 for CSRS retirees or for federal retirees. It'll show up in that January 1 payment, which covers the month of December. So in order to have any part of the COLA coming up for 2012, you really have to retire if you're a federal worker in November. And if you retire in November, you'll be eligible for 1/12. It'll be prorated, 1/12 of that 3.6%. So anybody who thinks that if they retire in December, they're going to catch the COLA for this year is...
It's just not going to work.
Not going to work. They will get... If they retire in December, they will get the full COLA if there is one for next year, but they won't get any of the COLA for this year.
In order to get the full, let's assume it is a 3.6% COLA, in order to get the full 3.6%, which is for CSRS people, when would they have had to retire? What's the latest day they could have retired?
The latest date they could have retired was December 31st of last year.
Okay. So they've missed it. So if they retired this month, they would get, what, 2/12 of 3.6%?
Right. In October, they'd get 2/12, and they would – that's, of course, a lot less. Now, for first votes, those under the newer federal employees retirement system, if they retired on a voluntary retirement, immediate, they're not eligible for a cost of living adjustment until they reach age 62. And if they have been retired for at least 1 year before reaching that age 62, they will get the full cost of living adjustment. But their cost of living adjustment isn't what the CSRS, or the Civil Service Retirement System, annuitants get. Their cost of living adjustment is considerably less.
They get what they would get 2.6 if the others got 3.6, correct?
Yeah, if the way the rules are, if the increase in the consumer price index is, and that's what we're talking about as far as the COLA, is 2% or less, they will get the cost of living adjustment equal to the CPI. But if the CPI increase is more than 2%, but no more than 3%, the cost of living adjustment is 2%. If the CPI increase is more than 3%, the cost of living adjustment for FERS folks is 1% less than the CPI increase. So what you just said, if it's 3.6, they're going to get a 2.6 if they're eligible for the full COLA.
Right, and again, that's for FERS employees. The COLAs don't start until age 62. It's an important point. But the bottom line is, as small as the amounts are now, if you were to retire this month or in November, in order to get a piece of that cost of living adjustment, all things being equal, it's certainly not worth doing it for that reason alone, is it?
No, and a lot of that cost of living increase is going to get eaten up by other increases in your retirement pay. Health benefit premiums, although they have not, they're not going to rise as high as they have in past, in immediate past years, they're still going to rise some. And so, and you'll get a you'll get a cost of living adjustment if you're due one in your January 1 payment, and then watch out, here comes February 1 payment, and that's going to include the increase in your health benefit premiums.
Sure, understanding that averages are tricky and are simply that. They're the middle of the road. But health insurance premiums on average are going up about 3.8%. And if the cost of living goes up 3.6, that'll sort of wipe that out.
Absolutely. And we get inquiries from people that want to know what happened to their cost of living increase. And these usually come after February 1st. And we ask them about their health benefits, what's plan they're in, and we look and we see that the premium increase pretty much wiped out that gross annuity increase that they received January 1st.
Right, and we found that, too. We got emails from some people when we said the average increase was 3.8, even with the qualifier average. One guy in Florida said his HMO is going up 41%. And heard from someone in the Midwest, and their HMO is going up literally 50%. So definitely does pay to shop around. And, David, I want to maybe get you to promise right now that you'll come on the show at least once during the open season, and maybe an emphasis on some of the best buys for retired people.
That'll be my pleasure.
Absolutely. Well, that's wonderful. And are you hearing anything? We've just got about a minute left. Are you hearing anything from the Super Committee? There don't seem to be many leaks about this bipartisan deficit reduction committee.
No, they've just started working. And, of course, they have to come up with something by, I believe it's November.
It's right around Thanksgiving, 15, I think.
Yeah, something like that. And And I don't, you know, they're just now getting their feet wet in this thing and getting to know each other.
Yeah, no, seems to me nobody's hearing it. David, thank you so much for being. We'll get you back here during open season. Thanks, David Snell, and thanks for everybody listening in. Remember, we're archived on our homepage, so you can listen to this show or any of them anytime. Have a good week. Stay safe.